Is Rue Radio.
On today's show, we look back on 10 years since Hurricane Katrina. Former Governor Kathleen Blanco reflects on a defining moment during her term as governor shortly after the storm.
We travel to the quirky beach town of Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, and take a look at how their monthly arts walk is a sure sign of the community's recovery in the past 10 years.
Louisiana Public Broadcasting producer Tika Lawdon discusses her documentary focusing on the renewal of New Orleans, as well as the impact of the storm on everything from education to healthcare.
On Louisiana's Lab, state climatologist Barry Keim looks back on the 2005 hurricane season, the most active on record. Nick Jansen gives us a better understanding of the conditions that helped create Hurricane Katrina.
On Capital Access, higher ed has had a hard year and it just keeps getting harder. Higher Education Commissioner Joseph Rallo talks to Wallace Watkins about dealing with additional budget slashing since the close of this year's legislative session. But first, the news. Welcome back to Rue Radio. I'm Anne Maria Wadd.
And I'm Sue Lincoln. Several weeks ago, Anne here, along with reporter Wallace Watkins and Travis Lux, one of our interns, went to Bay St. Louis for a contest.
We had 24 hours to do a radio story. How we ended up in Bay St. Louis is kind of a long story, but when we did get there, we found a handful of stories that could be told about the tight-knit community that bounced back from Hurricane Katrina.
You could only bring one of those stories home, so here it is.
Doug Nihilet was a seasoned hurricane hunter for the Air Force Reserve. So, of course, when Hurricane Katrina approached the Gulf Coast 10 years ago, he had no plans to evacuate.
My daughter calls, and I said, "Hello, Courtney. Wow, look at that roof. It just blew off that building." My daughter screams at the top of her lungs. She says, "Daddy, what are you doing in Bay St. Louis?" I said, "Courtney, I don't have time to talk about this right now."
Doug had a harrowing experience during Katrina. After the building he was in started to collapse, he and four other people found refuge in an oak tree, holding on for their dear lives, while the 30-foot storm surge pounded the small Gulf town. But Doug survived, and despite being among the hardest hit areas, his little town in Mississippi survived too.
Bay St. Louis is a cool little town to be in, and you know, it's coming back. It's as cool as it used to be, in a different way.
This is Doug's wife, Vicky. They own several businesses in Bay St. Louis, including the Antiques Mall, where I found them both today. And she's right. 10 years later, the town is doing well. People are moving back, new businesses are opening, and new developments are going up on the empty lots that Katrina left behind. One way you can tell, it's the second Saturday of the month.
Second Saturday, it's all the merchants on Main Street. Holds, and it's like an art walk. It is an art walk.
Mark Currier co-owns Gallery 220 with his wife Janice. They were the first business to reopen after the storm.
We decided to do something for the town and all the people, the volunteers and military. So we started doing Second Saturday every Saturday.
By the time Katrina hit, Second Saturday was already a 10-year tradition. Everyone comes out for the free live music, the art galleries and antique shops. They serve up food and drinks. For this small town with a vibrant arts community, Second Saturday was always a big deal. It became an even bigger deal after the storm. Vicky Nihilet remembers the first Second Saturday following Katrina.
We just stood in one of the buildings and had a beer and turned my car radio on and just, you know, it was kind of sad, but it was still... symbolic. Second Saturday never stopped.
Vicky shows me a picture of her and 11 others standing in the wreckage of a nearby building.
You know, we just stood right there at the corner of where the hub of activity had always been. And even though the road in front of it was pretty much gone, we kind of stood in the open building and had our little Second Saturday, little private party.
But now it's one big public party. Everyone coming together to share in the reviving of their community. And they're reminded of how the storm not only changed the town, but the people. Anne Tidwell, Vicky's mother, says in the days after the storm, when people like her were just trying to survive, it was the help from her neighbors that meant the most.
I know I was a more grateful, sharing person after that. Anything I have, anybody could have it.
This story was produced by Travis Lux, Wallace Watkins, and Anne Marie Awad as part of the 24-hour radio race from KCRW's Independent Producer Project.
Have you been back to Bay St. Louis since the three of you did this story?
Yeah, actually, I was there last week and I ran into Vicky. She reiterated something she said to me during our interview. It didn't end up making it into the story, but here's what she said.
This month, it's all about Katrina again. So maybe after September 1st, we can go back to normal news and not have the K word every other segment.
What Vicky is saying is a pretty common sentiment. Much of the remembrance of the storm is triggering for those who lived through it, and it's understandable that folks like Vicky are looking forward to this anniversary just coming and going. That's why we've tried not to devote wall-to-wall coverage to the anniversary, but at the same time, it is important to mark the occasion and look at how far places like Bay St. Louis have come in 10 years.
I can understand where Vicky is coming from. I was on the air when Katrina made landfall and covered the aftermath for what seemed like forever.
You also spent a lot of time with then-Governor Kathleen Blanco. Sue actually sat down with Blanco recently to discuss the challenges of leading the state through a disaster.
I'm Sue Lincoln. This is Insight, and my guest today is former Governor Kathleen Blanco. For each of us, the Katrina experience was very personal. For you, that personal experience often had to take a backseat to the public experience. Now, 10 years later, what memory stands out from the rest, as in, that was Katrina for me?
I walked into a shelter with President Bush, as a matter of fact. It was important for him to come and to touch people. They wanted to know that their president cared. They wanted to know that their governor cared. And my staff wanted me to stay close to the president. That's where all the cameras were. And I did for a courteous amount of time. I told my staff, I said, listen, I've been hearing things, and I've got to get more information. So I'm going to backtrack, and I'm going to go talk to a couple of these people. And one was a woman whose son had been away at camp in Mississippi when the evacuation notices went out. And she started driving toward Mississippi to get him. In the meantime, someone in Mississippi at the camp had given him a ride back to New Orleans, and they crossed paths not knowing. She got to the camp, found it deserted, and she could not get back into New Orleans because all traffic was going out. And she was worried sick about her son, not knowing where he was. As it turned out, she lived near a VA center. And she said every time she walked past there, the people in the center had been extremely nice and always said hello to her. So she told her son, she was a single mother, and she said, her son was about 14, if you're ever in trouble, you go there. Those are good people. They can help you. He made his way home and spent the night with the hurricane blowing. He slept through the whole thing and awoke in the morning and realized that, you know, his mother hadn't returned, and he actually made his way to the VA center. So this mother had been in the shelter for about 3 weeks, having no idea where her son was. And she was one shaken female. She was just beside herself. She told me her story, and we took the clues from that information. As it turned out, he was with the VA in Alexandria. We located him by that evening. It took a few hours. I asked the state police if they could ferry him in. And that evening, I delivered him to the shelter to his mother, who was so filled with tearful joyfulness. You know, it was just the most beautiful homecoming.
And you wanted that same relief, reunion, and homecoming for everyone, right?
It was so big. Everyone had been taken down, rich, poor, and everybody in between. I thought I needed to have the role of looking forward, looking past today's difficulties, and looking to the future to see what actually needed to be done to establish a rational recovery. And so these big policies that had to become established became quite important if we were going to pull ourselves out of today's misery and move to tomorrow's glory. And it was hard because not many people could understand the early decisions. I'm not sure what they expected, but of course, no decisions in those early days were perfect in their minds until, say, 10 years later.
Thank you.
This is 89.3 WRKF. Pause the live stream and pick up right where you left off on the WRKF app, available for Apple and Android devices.
The first WRKF Founders Luncheon will feature special guest speaker James Carville.
The last command of a failed sea captain is every person for himself. The first command of a successful captain is all hands on deck.
That's September 22nd at the Crown Plaza. WRKF members, reserve your seat or table at WRKF.org or by calling 926-3050.
Brought to you in part by Crocky Consulting.
I'm Sue Lincoln.
And I'm Anne-Marie Awad. Welcome back to Rue Radio. Free First Sunday is next weekend on September 6th. That means the Louisiana Art and Science Museum, the USS Kidd, and the LSU Museum of Art will open their doors free of charge.
At LASM, the infinite possibilities of origami. The exhibit holds more than 140 works of paper artistry by 50 international artists.
At the LSU Museum of Art, a first look at their newest exhibit, Toulouse-Lautrec and La Vie Moderne, Paris 1880 through 1910. LSU art history professor Darius Spyth will give a talk at 2 p.m. on how the work captures Paris at the turn of the century. We know now that Hurricane Katrina was one of the deadliest hurricanes in the history of the United States. But how does a storm like Katrina even come to be? Nick Jansen takes a closer look for this week's Louisiana's Lab.
This is Louisiana's Lab. I'm Nick Jansen. 10 years later, the 2005 hurricane season remains the most active on record.
The sea surface temperatures were like off the charts in the tropical breeding grounds.
Barry Keim is Louisiana's state climatologist. He says hurricanes need warm water to develop. The warmer the water, the stronger hurricanes can potentially become.
That's what went into producing the 28 named storms. It was a crazy year.
Tropical Storm Zeta was the last storm of the season, and it formed on December 30th. A full month after what should have been the end of hurricane season. The 2005 season reminds us of how destructive hurricanes are.
I think the biggest lesson we've learned is that, hey, yes, this can happen.
Even though the past 10 years have been relatively quiet, Keim says Louisianians still get anxious when a storm enters the Gulf.
There's virtually no complacency in South Louisiana about hurricanes. You say hurricanes, people get the hell out of there. That's a great thing.
Talking with Keim, you get the sense he appreciates both the beauty and the devastation of a storm. During the interview, I couldn't help noticing a poster hanging on his office wall.
Is that Katrina on your desk there?
That is Katrina indeed.
Why do you have it up there?
I hate to say it in quite these terms, but it's really, from a meteorological perspective, it's a beautiful storm. Something as vicious as it was, and when it lead to deaths and things like that, you hate to use terms like that, but looking at its shape and its form with this, the symmetry, a very defined eye.
Hurricanes take in dry air as they approach land, which typically causes them to break apart. But that didn't happen to Katrina, so it kept the form that Keim finds so stunning. For Louisiana's Lab, I'm Nick Jansen.
Support for healthcare and science coverage on Louisiana's Lab comes from Bazil, Saxe & Wilson, serving the legal and business needs of people and companies throughout Louisiana, and from ExxonMobil Baton Rouge, supporting education in science, technology, engineering, and math.
This weekend, Louisiana Public Broadcasting premieres the documentary Katrina 10 Years After, A Second Life, A Second Chance. The film focuses on the resurrection of New Orleans over the past 10 years, as well as plans for future rebuilding. Producer and director Tikka Lawdon took a look at Katrina's impacts on education and healthcare and on the grassroots efforts of people who are still rebuilding their homes and neighborhoods a decade later. Sue spoke with Tikka about making the documentary.
Tikka, when did you start working on this documentary? I know it's not something you can put together in 5 minutes. And I know the archives are extensive here, but how long did it take you from conception to actually being ready for broadcast?
I started developing an outline, a proposal for the project in January after the Christmas holidays. And we started out in the field shooting interviews in the beginning of February. So it really was quite a bit of work and a very short turnaround. Typically, something of this size and magnitude would take at least a year.
Turning back is difficult. When you went through the archived footage, how emotionally draining was that for you?
We do have vast archives here. We house WWL and WWOZ during the actual event. And when we were doing all of the Katrina footage, we were categorizing it by, you know, floods, by rescues, by levees. So it makes searching quite easy. And I wanted something that my own 12-year-old could see, and your 5-year-old could see, or your 80-year-old could see. And there were some things that I felt were just too tough to view. We know they're there. We know all the deaths happen. But I'd steered away from really showing that type of devastation. People tell their stories.
How did you find the stories to tell? Did you look back at the footage, or did you go and just find people now, 10 years after?
I really lean towards characters development and just people, and that's where the stories are. And finding the right people was a lot easier than I thought. I visited with a group in the Lower Ninth Ward, the Lower Ninth Ward Living Museum there, and said, okay, who do you think would be really good interview subjects? This is what we want to do. And they pointed me to Robert Green, who was on their board. And I went to visit with Mr. Green, and his story was so compelling, the experiences that he and his family have had. He lost his granddaughter in front of his eyes, his 3-year-old, and his mother drowned. And the story is told quite eloquently by Mr. Green in the program.
I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Governor Blanco. What from all of this is your personal never forget moment, the thing that in your mind when you think about Hurricane Katrina sums up the experience and what you want to take away for the future?
One thing that I guess a lesson learned with this project is when we first started talking about doing it, it was, God, this is going to be so dark. It's going to be so difficult. But it was just the opposite. It was very uplifting, very positive. And sure, there's still some problems. There's still some things that need to be addressed. And 10 years, 20 years from now, we may look back and go, okay, we've recovered pretty much. But the absolute bottom line in it all was the experience of other human beings taking care of other human beings. And that's what was happening in that original footage and in that original experience when we were seeing what was going on. People were helping each other. People were taking care of each other. They put their differences aside and lifted each other up. And that's still going on.
Thank you so much, Tika.
Katrina, 10 Years After, A Second Life, A Second Chance airs statewide on LPB and WYES on Saturday, August 29th at 7 p.m.
Last week on RU Radio, I spoke with LSU System President F. King Alexander about the future of LSU and of Louisiana higher education. Higher ed leaders like Alexander have been on the defensive this year, but the Board of Regents just suffered 2 budgetary blows in recent weeks. Wallace Watkins has this report.
This is Capital Access. I'm Wallace Watkins. The Louisiana Board of Regents has learned that they're owed a decent chunk of money.
The Board of Regents was supposed to have received about $15 million over the past 20 years from the Racing Commission, and those dollars had not been sent to the board.
Higher Education Commissioner Joseph Rallo explains the legislative auditor discovered the money required by statute had never been paid.
The Racing Commission indicated there was no mechanism to do that. From our perspective, it's a very simple mechanism. I mean, if the dollars were there, all they had to do was ask.
It's something the legislature will have to deal with. That can't happen until next spring. The legislature, in the form of the Joint Budget Committee, has dealt with the Board of Regents recently. They dealt them a budget cut of $3.8 million. This is for the budget that just started July 1st.
We had no advance notice. We were watching the Revenue Estimating Committee on Friday, and that was the first time that anyone heard that we were taking a cut. And what was interesting to me was that, you know, last session we fought against what would have been an 82% budget cut, and if you do the math, we took an 82% budget cut of the amount of dollars that were reduced across the state.
And Rallo says they expect further budget trimming because the price of oil is so far below the $62 pre-calculated into this budget.
Now it's less than 40, so we know that times are going to be tough again.
College students have now started their fall classes, and there's word that there may not be enough money to fully fund TOPS. At least students didn't have to worry about the save fees, since they did not show up on tuition bills. Of course, students haven't signed the tax credits for the SAVE plan over to the Board of Regents either. For Capital Access, I'm Wallace Watkins.
Support for Capital Access comes from Southern Strategy Group, governmental relations, strategic planning, and public relations in Baton Rouge, and Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, supporting Louisiana agriculture through education.
I'm Sue Lincoln.
And I'm Anne Maria Watt.
Have you always been enchanted by the ballet, in particular, the Nutcracker? Get out your leotard and tights and warm up your dance muscles, because open auditions for Baton Rouge Ballet Theatre's annual production of The Nutcracker, A Tale from the Bayou, is just a month away on Sunday, September 27th. They're looking for hundreds of children to fill the roles of lambs, cherubs, mice, cooks, soldiers, angels, and party kids. Adults are also needed to be the parents in the opening party scene.
Next weekend for Labor Day is one of Louisiana's biggest but weirdest sounding festivals, the Shrimp and Petroleum Festival in Morgan City.
I've always been afraid to try the fried shrimp there. What oil do they use for cooking?
You gotta wonder. Closer to home, this coming Tuesday, September 1st, the Southern Indie Film Series debuts at the Manship Theater. Zach Godshall is showing his award-winning feature film, Lo and Behold. It starts at 7.
Coming up on Out to Lunch, Stephanie Regal talks advertising, specifically very big advertising, with folks from Lamar Advertising and Vivid Ink Graphics.
And next week on Rue Radio, the science and the sound of marsh creation in Bayou Grand Liard.
But that's a wrap for us this week. I'm Sue Lincoln.
And I'm Anne Maria Watt.